Well, it's been a while since we heard from you. I mean, most people remember you from your days with Delry Network, and then it got kind of quiet. Yes. So you did some movie production, small movies and stuff, mm-hmm. and then you kind of disappeared even more from the public eye. So, what made you move first to India and then Jerusalem? And
well, after
it must be quite a big difference. It's a different world.
Yeah, it is. I think I was looking for that kind of shock to my system as far as my comfort zone. I was, after the band split up, and I did more theater acting and some film production, as you were talking about, I ended up buying a nightclub with some other partners in Portland, Oregon, and we kind of tried to introduce rock bands to the electronic crowd and electronic music to the rock crowd, and built this club, which became a great success in Portland, but it also became a great weight on my shoulders, both as drinking too much alcohol and being into drug culture too much.
Yeah. And I had never done
I had never done that when I was in the network, in the band. Like a lot of bands are party bands, but we weren't. And so I kind of lost myself during that process of the nightclub, lost my focus as a human being, lost my direction as an artist. And it wasn't until my father became ill with cancer that I had to kind of reevaluate where I was heading with my life. After he passed away, I did construction work for a year. And then I knew that India was a place where I could actually slow down and listen to what my thoughts were. And that's what I needed to do. I had been to India in 1993. To interview the Dalai Lama, and so this was something that I was hungering to do again. I still would love to, I'd like to go to India next week if I could. But, so I went down there for, spent about a year. I spent about half of that year with Tibetan monks. I lived in a monastery for 4 months. And that was the time period that kind of cleared my head up where I decided I wanted to do music again. And I felt like there was still a lot more to be said with music. And then I met some Israelis that were traveling throughout India, and I decided I would go to Israel to kind of spend more time with them. And that was when I just fell in love with Jerusalem. Jerusalem's a very special city because you have Muslims, Christians, Jews, and people from all over the world that are all coming there to try to find this higher place in their relationship to what we have named God. And that was a really fascinating place to write music and to live and to be around those kind of conversations, as opposed to conversations about work or shopping or sports. Or, you don't really have those kind of conversations in Jerusalem. So I really liked that a lot. And so that was 3 years, and that's when I wrote most of the songs for the new record when I was living there.
Because I think it's... Sure, it's musically something different than what you did in the past with Network, and also it's probably from the lyrics also a bit deeper now, without preaching. I mean, that's the point. For people often think this must be preachy if someone touches that kind of topics. I mean, but it's not. I mean, but it shows a totally different Dan Reed than people remember from the 80s, late 80s. So I think that's probably also through the journey you did that you come to those... to the place where you now feel comfortable with this kind of music more than you probably hadn't imagined that 20 years ago that
I didn't.
You would go this way.
I knew that that's what made me stop playing music was my time with the Dalai Lama. As I came out of that and I realized that what we were doing with the network was half positive, you know, with songs like Salt of Joy, and we had a message with our band and with the music, but at the same time the other half of that was very sexual and very young. And
the stuff which been heavy rotation and MTV and...
Yeah. So it was a different,
the other side.
It was a different thing, and I wanted to take a break from that. I just didn't know it was going to be that many years, so...
But it feels good to be back, I guess.
Yes, I love playing this new music because it really seems to connect with what a lot of people are wanting to hear, and it's helping them... I don't know. I hope it's helping them. They tell me it is. That it's helping them to kind of look in the mirror at their problems and realize that they're not that big of a problem, that they're more of just mountains we need to get over.
Yeah.
And I'm getting so many messages about how the music is helping people. So that to me is the only reason really to do this again.
And I think it's, I like the album a lot. I mean, it's very homogeneous from everything. It's even if it's different kind of topics, I like the Dictator song, the last one. That's really great. And I like the video, and it's very cool with the footage used from Chaplin.
Yeah.
And it's worked out very well. When you had the idea to do that one?
Well, I had the music, and I had co-written the music with another gentleman named Bradley Fish from Jerusalem as well. He's actually from the States, but he lives in Jerusalem. And I had this music sitting around, and I had the chorus, "Where all of the angels sing tonight, or someday the dolphins will take back the sea," and all that. I had this chorus, but I didn't have any verse for it. And no matter what I sang over the verse, it didn't seem to feel right. And then I was just watching this, trying to go to sleep one night, surfing YouTube, watching Laurel and Hardy movies and old black and white Marx Brothers stuff. And then I ran across some Charlie Chaplin, and then I watched this Dictator speech, and I just thought it was so, you know, he was a prophet, the way he was giving this speech in 1940.
Yeah.
And this is in the middle of this, you know, World War II, and here he was dressed and had this kind of Hitler vibe going on, and he was saying all these wonderful, beautiful things, how we kind of wished, you know, Hitler would have been, that would have been nice. And so I was reading this, or listening to the speech, and I was listening to the music that I had playing in the background, and it was just fitting over it perfectly. So what I did is I ended up sampling the whole speech, chopped it up, because it's quite long. I think the speech is about 9 minutes long. And so I chopped it up and used what I thought was the best, not the best, but the most applicable 3 minutes for the actual song. And put it into rhythm and, you know, that kind of stuff, and repeated certain things that I thought needed to be repeated. And then I came to the process of getting the rights to use it, because, you know, it's the Charlie Chaplin Foundation. So we sent the song to them, and I got an email back from his granddaughter saying that if my grandfather was alive today, he would approve of this usage of the song. So you can use his speech, you can use his image in the video. We're happy to have you do that.
Yeah, because I don't think that they give often the permission to use some of their stuff.
But we heard it was going to be really, really difficult.
Yeah, that's why I heard that it's not easy to get permission from them to use some of the footage. So
they liked it, which was good. That helped a lot.
Yeah, I mean, and it's an extraordinary video, and it's pretty often you see these days videos on YouTube which are mainly live sequences from the band or something.
Yeah.
But as there is no budget, and people don't do the big videos anymore.
Yeah, they don't.
So that's, I mean, probably the past helps you there, but producing.
Well, the thing is that we had to get the rights from them before we made the video.
Sure.
So, because we didn't want to spend the money and the time making the video and then them saying no. So that was, I had to write a long letter explaining exactly what the video was going to be like. And
kind of storyboard for it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but I mean, it turns out great. I mean, it really turns out great. But it's like, if I got it right, the music, the album was ready earlier. It just got released here by the label now.
Yeah, by AOR. It just got released last month, I think.
Yeah, I think a little bit earlier this month.
Oh, really?
Earlier this month.
Okay, wow.
So it's just like, it's just out for like 2 weeks, I think.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it's been out for about 8 months in England and Scandinavia. It came out in the United States, though, just 2 months ago.
So you already played a few shows, I think.
Yeah, there were solo shows. These are the first band shows. Yeah.
Okay. You do the acoustic stuff and you do the band stuff. I think it's a different atmosphere if you're up there alone or with the band.
Well, I do it both now. I mean, like this show tonight, we do about 13 songs with the band, and I do about 4 songs on my own. So you kind of get a feel of what the solo shows are like, but you also get the feeling of what the band shows are like as well.
Yeah, because I think it's a different story, and sometimes it's the acoustic stuff is more intense.
Yeah.
And on the other hand, also, so if you have a good song and you can, if you strip it down to acoustic, just vocals and piano or vocals and guitar, then it really shows how good it is. Because if you have a big production, you can kind of cover some flaws in the song, and so that's more intense and more detailed sometimes. You hear where you get more out of it. So I think it's also probably a bit more you have to give then.
Yeah, that's for sure.
So it's more challenging in a way.
That's true. I find just the dynamics of the difference between playing with the band solo are both important. You know, like when you're playing solo, you're connecting really deeply to the intention of the lyric, and your energy level physically is way low, but your intention is way high. When you're playing with the band, it becomes more just celebratory, you know, more fun. So then you start interacting with other musicians, and the intention of the lyric sometimes decreases, but the actual physical energy that you're putting into the music increases. So I like both of them very much.
So can we expect you to come back next year?
I hope we'll see if people come to the show tonight and they want us to come back, it'd be great.
Yeah, the problem is probably a bit of the timing at this time. And in November is almost everybody's on tour, so it's probably a bit. Then it's a lot of competition for the concerts. I mean, I have now like in 5 days 4 concerts.
Oh really? Wow, Jesus.
So that's also sometimes a bit of.
Is there other shows going on in Luna tonight?
I don't know. I'm not from here. I live for about an hour and a half, but something close to away from here. So I don't know. But Dortmund is usually a lot, and that's not far.
Okay.
Oh well. Have you already started working on new material as the album is out for in other places for a longer period of time?
Actually, the new record is finished. It's written. It's we start recording in January, and then again in April.
Okay.
So it'll be out next fall, and this time we're going to time it to where it's released everywhere at the same time.
Yeah, it makes sense, because so it's a little bit confusing. You see different dates, and it's not out here. And
well, it was really hard because we started our own record company, and we needed to find distributors in each territory, and it just took more time in other places than other.
Yeah, that's the part of the business just not that much fun.
Yeah, it's actually, I'm enjoying it very much. We're going to release some more artists on the label early next year, March or April, of some other bands that are really good, really great music.
And I think, if I remember right, you're coming back to Sweden Rock next summer,
this
stage this year.
In June,
So you've been there doing acoustic, and now you're coming back with the band, right?
That's correct.
So we probably can see more of you then also. And mainland Europe, just up in the north.
Seems
you've been to Sweden a few times already.
Yeah, I have. I'm playing a lot up there. I'm playing more up there next month. Again in March, playing some more shows. It's great. I really love playing up there. The people really love the music. So.
Yeah, I think it sometimes just needs a little bit better. People discover it in other places, because it always depends a bit on promotion as well, and the people here. So the people don't know the music. They don't go to concerts, so it's both. You need the concert to promote the album, and the album also the music to get the people coming. It's not easy.
Well, Munich is great. I mean, the first time I played in Munich was about a year and a half ago, and there was 20 people that came to the show. Then I played Munich again solo about a year ago, and there was about 50 people there. And then we played in Munich last night with the band, and there was about 90 people. So it just keeps growing a little bit.
Yeah.
So that's good.
You just have to be patient.
Very much so.
So, and what are your any other plans so far you can talk about?
Well, I'm still working on screenplays for other films. I'm not going to produce anymore. I'm just like writing. And I got a book that I'm working on, which kind of documents my time in the band, the Dan Reed Network. Losing myself into
finding yourself again.
No, I didn't find it's a big full circle story about my time in the monastery and time in Jerusalem, and just kind of insights and discoveries along the way. Whether it's useful to people or not, I don't know. But it's a
as long as it's entertaining.
In
a way. Then it's good.
Okay. That's the key. And then producing other bands and working on the label and getting other music out. So it's just going to be a busy next few years, that's for sure.
So we'll see more of you. That sounds fantastic. And.